After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hello, everyone. Another Baseball America Playoff Podcast. John and JJ today. And we're going to bring the energy as much as we can, but every one of you is going to understand if you watched that game last night, especially if, like us, you're on the East Coast and you watched that game to the end last night. The energy's there, but at the same time, it's also covered by a massive amount of not just fatigue, but even as a neutral observer of that game, the adrenaline of that game. Like, I mean, at some point, your body's like, I'm tapped out. You know, I've seen so many swings in this game. But you know, before we do that, we do want to remind you, we thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America podcast. Our podcast is sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. Shop now at baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP to receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com to shop for hats, shirts, and more today. So, John?
JJ, there's a lot to unpack. There's a lot to unpack. We have a whole weekend of World Series to unpack. I haven't seen the ratings because I'm not Mike and Mike. I'm not going to obsess over it. But I do think this World Series has people talking about baseball. And the last 2 years, I think we thought maybe the narratives of last year, the Cubs and the Indians, would be what drove that. That's what people thought was driving interest. I think this whole month of insanity of Major League Baseball's playoffs, which have been very good, there's been some ugly games, but very tense, competitive games, and interesting stories and fascinating players, is making people interested in Major League Baseball's product. And I think that's good for baseball. I think it also just for all the aesthetic issues some people might have with it, I think you contrast what Major League Baseball puts on the field in October with the National Football League. It's not even close. I think the NFL's loss is Major League Baseball's game. I mean, like, when you hear people talking about Dak Prescott being the second best quarterback in the NFL right now, among healthy quarterbacks, you see how many bad quarterbacks there are in the NFL. That narrative and all the other stuff going on with the NFL, you know, Major League Baseball can have a controversy like Yuli Gurriel mocking Yu Darvish, and can get past that because of what's happening on the field. And the NFL has a bigger controversy, I get it, but it's harder to get past that when the on-field product blows. And Major League Baseball's on-field product does not blow. It's not bad. It's thrilling, and I'm sure we will debate the aesthetics of it, but where we are right now is an off day that everybody needs.
Yes.
Fans and players included. No.
Francisco Liriano, he's good. Like, he would be
still fresh.
I'm ready. Is there any situation where I'll come in? Probably not, but I'm ready.
You know, there are fans who need the break. My brother was on the West Coast this week, and he texted me last night as he was getting ready to board a flight, like, why aren't the Astros using Giles? I'm like, have you watched any of these games?
Yeah.
So there's so much.
I was debating if JD Davis is not on this roster.
No.
But
no,
if he was, and it's like, okay, it's the 15th, we got Giles or we got JD Davis.
Right.
I'd be like, you know, Davis, I mean, he could give us an inning.
Yeah, no, seriously, you know, it was like those first half of the year, you know, where we had so many major league players. Was it Chris Jimenez pitched six times in the first half of the year? I mean, we were headed for position players pitching last night. Carlos Beltran, that's like the one thing. He's gonna Pat Venditti it. He's going to go left and right. But I mean, I think it starts off with the Astros do have this World Series lead, but I think it's totally up for grabs who wins the last two games. I think and the momentum swings in these games have been incredible. And just in the series where the Astros win this epic game two, and then take a 2-1 series lead, and then...
Which feels like that was about 7 years ago.
Right. And then the game four swing with the way the Dodgers exploded offensively, and then you're a third of the way supposedly through game five with the Dodgers in a 2-2 series with a 4-0 lead and Clayton Kershaw on the mound. And that game goes bonkers sideways, so...
There's 4-0, 4-4.
Right.
7-4. And at 7-4, the thing that I didn't understand at that point is that there were some people kind of like felt like that this was a normal, like what you think of as a 7-4 game. It's like, no, we've established at this point that...
There's nothing normal about
this. This is bonkers.
Bonkers.
And... It really was. It was completely bonkers yesterday. I don't want to slight the other games, but that game five, you as some people are saying, you could do a documentary on that game.
Right. But we could just talk about it on a podcast. I mean, like, it is one of these historic World Series games. The difference with social media is everybody realizes it as it's happening. I would also say overhypes it as it's happening. I mean... It really felt to me a lot like that 16-14 or whatever 15-14 game, the Blue Jays Phillies game from 24 years ago. I remember watching that. It was a fall break, and I was up in Charlottesville to cover a North Carolina Virginia football game, and we watched that game at some horrible frat party in Charlottesville, where I'm sure people were honoring Thomas Jefferson in horrible ways. But it was a ridiculous. That game was ridiculous. That was had Mitch Williams and had all those guys in it. This game last night felt a lot like that game where it just felt like last batter wins. You know, like you just never felt like either team had pitchers who get the other team out. Obviously, there are other factors, there are mitigating factors. Kyle Glazer's been writing about the balls. He's not the only one who's been writing about those about the baseballs. But what do you think the number? The list the reasons of why these games are so. Because the night before wasn't bonkers, JJ. When it was Alex Wood and Charlie Morton, it wasn't bonkers. And they're using the same balls. Why was it so much more bonkers the next night? I think that's just baseball, you know? I just think that some pitchers execute better. Alex Wood is a fastball changeup left-hander. Didn't throw a lot of sliders. All
right.
of a sudden,
I mean,
he's better.
Which...
Clayton Kershaw, you know, 4-run lead, keeps trying to throw sliders, can't locate the slider, doesn't adjust. To me, it's just a matter of, and that's an all-time great pitcher, this is not a narrative. This is just a fact. His legacy is damaged by the fact that in the postseason, he is not the dominant pitcher of his generation. It is a fascinating rivalry between him and Madison Bumgarner. In the regular season, it's no contest. Kershaw greater than Bumgarner. But in the postseason, it's not close. We've never seen Madison Bumgarner with a 4-run lead. I don't care what baseballs. He's not giving that up. He's not coming out before in the fifth inning. Not happening.
I do think part of it also there are 1,000 factors that tie into this, but I do think one of them also is that it is the parks that we're seeing these games played in too. Like Minute Maid had some home runs last night that in a normal park, you know, I guess what is normal?
This is the normal park now. That's the thing. It was dismissed by some people after in the heat of the late 90s and the turn of the century. Before we, and I did this a lot on a lot of radio shows, I always thought about how the ballparks were a big factor. I wasn't convinced that it was all PEDs. And guess what? It wasn't all PEDs because the pitchers were using too. It was not all PEDs. Clearly that was part of it, but all these ballparks were also part of it. They're still here. The year that I want to know what the hell happened now is 2014. Mm-hmm. When you really look at that's the aberration, JJ. The home run, 2014 was the fewest home runs in a full season since 1993. So that's the one year. Every other year, it's been a pretty steady stream up. Now we have some spikes.
No, because it was steady, and now we basically hit the boosters.
Well, yeah, but you know, the thing is, like, it was this year was the real booster. Last year was a big booster, but it looks like a bigger booster because it's 2014. Because 2014 was 4,100 home runs collectively, roughly. And this year was what, 5,600 or is it 6,200? 6,000.
Yeah,
something like
over
that.
6,000.
Last year was 6,600. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So Something clearly has changed, but the ballparks are a part of it.
And the thing that stands out to me is that for the World Series, it is different than the baseball I'm used to, but at the same time, I'm not saying it's not awesome.
The game before was not.
No, but more games have been this than have been that. We've had the best pitchers. We've had great pitchers go out there and get shelled time, not every outing, but time and time again during this postseason, because what we have now is literally everyone in the lineup for every team being able to hit the ball out. And that's the world of baseball in 2017.
No question there.
And what I do, I have trouble with it just from the standpoint of comprehending it as I'm watching it last night. Like this has changed so quickly. And I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm just saying it's changed so quickly that Jeff Passan tweets out, when the Astros fall down 4-0 and Kershaw's on the mound, you know, really you probably should be just using the dregs of your pen so that you'll save them for, you know.
And that was, yeah.
And that's like.
Let's really look at it. The Dodgers gave up 13 runs last night. 10 of them were given up by Kershaw and Brandon Morrow. So let's really think
about
it.
Which Brandon Morrow says.
So Brandon Morrow comes out there and just gets torched, and it's not all on him. He made 6 pitches, JJ.
He's the first pitcher, I believe, ever to give up 4 runs on 6 pitches.
Yeah, because he was toast. And so that's on Dave Roberts. Tony Cingrani came in afterwards and was like, throwing missiles. Mm-hmm. Why? And Ross Stripling. Ross Stripling's good, and he's a multi-inning guy. You needed Ross Stripling there. So that's just bad managing. That's all there is to it. And the guy and Buck and Smoltz, who certainly have their moments, and I'm watching it on Fox Deportes because of a local dispute here. I'm on my phone. I'm watching it on FS Deportes to watch the games. But I have it on the phone, and Buck and John Smoltz are saying, you know, and he said he didn't want to use him. Then don't use him. If you know you don't want to use him, why did he use him? So that's part of it. The other part, really, a lot of credit to the Astros offense. That great offense. What was it? Didn't Travis Sochik tweet that it's like 4th best weighted runs created offense of all time?
No, it's one of the greatest.
It's an historic. We've said it all year. Yeah. Best offense in baseball by far. Great offense. But the rest of it really is on Kershaw. Honestly, it's on Kershaw. I mean, that's what I keep coming back to. If you're the Dodgers, you can't lose a game like that where you give your ace a 4-0 lead. He can't do what he did. That's pretty brutal. I think he's the number one goat horns for me, for the Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw.
But the point I was making, though, is that if this was, though, is what baseball was in general,
I guess the other
during the regular season, I wouldn't be able to handle that. That'd be too much.
Right, but I'll also say, yeah, like the other pitchers who gave up these runs are Colin McHugh, Brad Peacock, Chris Davinsky. Dallas Keuchel getting shelled last time, that's no bueno. But Dallas Keuchel getting shelled, he hasn't been great the whole postseason. I mean, like, Kershaw had 7 innings, 11 strikeouts the first game. I just thought last night, the moment, we saw a couple of great players, JJ. Alex Bregman, no moment has been too big for Alex Bregman.
But before
this
we leave this point, though,
Kershaw, the moment's gotten too big for him.
You are simplifying though a little bit, though, because I'll list you the Dodgers pitchers who gave up homers last night: Clayton Kershaw, Kenta Maeda,
right,
Brandon Morrow twice, Tony Cingrani,
right.
All of them gave up homers.
Correct.
So when I say like
good numbers, Morrow and Kershaw.
Right, but when you say, like, what I'm saying, like, as far as the craziness of this is
that... I'm not dismissing the craziness. I am trying to oversimplify because it was an insane game. So I'm trying to take this insanity and not talk about it for 3 hours. I am trying to oversimplify it. My first oversimplification is Alex Bregman's a great player. My second oversimplification is that Clayton Kershaw cannot be called an all-time great pitcher until he shoves... Just do it twice in a series. That's it. Do it twice in a series.
He may get one more opportunity.
He might, but it won't be in a start.
No.
Do what Justin Verlander did.
Hey, Madison Bumgarner says, don't worry, game 7, you don't have to start to be the hero.
But I can't see him doing what Bumgarner did. I mean, I really can't. It is insane to see a guy who, like, we used to talk about J.J. Howley, Maddux and Glavine, they just weren't built for the postseason. Those guys' postseason ERAs are comparable to what they did in the regular season. They're not better. Not appreciably better. They certainly weren't stellar postseason studs. But Kershaw, that's not even close. His ERA in the postseason is crazy, like 2 runs higher than it is in the regular season. What do you make of that? I mean, it's not all just the offensive environment that he pitches in is crazy. Why is it so much more difficult for him in the playoffs than the regular season? I'm really curious because it's not small sample size anymore either.
The thing that has often happened that did not happen this year, so he does not have this explanation this year. They have
short rest
over and over. And by the way, we have seen now again, game 7, talk about relievers in this. I think if this goes game 7, everyone clearly will be available. But
he's pitched 118 postseason innings in his career now and has a 4.50 ERA.
That's bad.
It's bad. And he's given up 18 home runs in 118 innings. That's no bueno. That's where it starts. If the Dodgers are, you look at the Dodgers versus the Astros, the number one advantage you would say that Dodgers have is they have the best pitcher on the planet and the Astros don't. As good as Verlander is, he's not Kershaw. Well, in the postseason, in the World Series, Kershaw ain't Kershaw either. He was great in the first game, but you give him a 4-run lead, I don't care the ballpark or the opponents. He's supposed to hold that lead at least through 5 innings. I don't think that's asking too much of the world's greatest pitcher, TM. So I think he has ceded that title. It's up for grabs. I don't know who it is. It ain't him. Because Steven Strasburg could do it. You know, Justin Verlander can do it. We've seen pitchers who can do it in the postseason. Not this guy. I mean, that's just, if I were a Dodger fan, I'd just be disgusted with him. As it is, I'm just flummoxed. Because is it just the baseballs?
Yes.
This year?
I think part of it.
But what about the other starts? What about last year?
Short rest. Almost always.
There's always an excuse.
No, when you say almost always an excuse, it's almost always on short rest. And we now know the reason we have seen no pitcher throwing short rest is that it's dumb to do generally. It generally, I'm not saying it's never worked, but the reality of it is that a starting pitcher coming back on short rest statistically is way worse. And how many times, I'm not saying it excuses at all, but how many times has Clayton Kershaw pitched on short rest and gotten shelled? And they keep, and every year he'd do that, the next year
this was regular rest.
But every year that he'd do that, and then they'd say, we're not going to do that again. And then next year they would, it's basically like the Angels in a starting rotation in September, where it's like, we're going to have 5 this year. It's like, oh no, we don't have 5.
Right.
Clayton Kershaw's like, oh, we're not going to use him on short rest this year. And then every year be like, and this year they did. This year, look, this is, that I agree. That is one that goes on the resume for him as a giant negative.
Yeah,
because
that's what I'm saying. It's not all on him, but he is that's the number one factor why the Dodgers lost that game. The number two factor why the Dodgers lost the game because the Astros won it. And the Astros did just do some amazing things offensively, JG. Was there any doubt that Jose Altuve was going to hit a 3-run home run last night? At least in that moment?
I love, Kyle had the quote in his story after the game about Springer, like he blows the center play in center field, and he said it was a very angry swing that he made, just, and it was angry, and
it sure was.
The ball suffered for it. But by the way, again, it's a minor detail, but the things that you also get in here is like, okay, why? You've really got to work out during the season that go and no are not your words that, are the sending a guy from third. Because, you can talk about the little details.
Didn't Chris Woodard also then say, well, I think he would have been out?
Right. But he wanted to send him.
Right. No, I understand.
I think that's
overblown on Twitter because he says to him right then, I think he would have been out. So if he'd been out.
But you're also going to say that because you're also trying to make the dude feel bad that he completely blew what you said.
I understand, but also second and third, one out, and they don't get the run home. So it's not just on that. That's an important detail to an extent. But get the run home. And when everyone's swinging for the downs and there's no adjustment, I'm just stunned. We just see Major League Baseball at these extremes. We talk about it all the time, JJ. The game is just played at such extremes. That the nuances, that's a nuance that everyone talks about. The nuance that we're not talking about is get the stinking run home, execute. Second and third and one out, you have to execute. The Dodgers did not execute. When there's a mistake, you're supposed to pick the other teammate up. It's harder to do when every swing is trying to hit the ball 394 feet with a launch angle. I'm not being that, but I mean.
But and I'm saying, like, no, right now, with this game right now, launch angle, because you know what?
The runs of beauty,
yeah, I was saying, but the runs in that game, the thing that made no sense to me ever in that game was
it bunt.
In the seventh inning, wasn't it?
I don't know, but it was just stupid.
It was like...
That was the dumbest play of the whole
game. I believe, like I'm saying, this is not second guessing, because I think at the time I said I put the over-under on the runs scored in that game at 25, and I think at that time there was something like 12 runs scored. Like, to think in that game, the way that that was going, knowing the bullpens that both teams had, to think that...
That was a top of the seventh, 7-7 game, Justin Turner leads off with a double...
Your cleanup hitter.
Kike Hernandez.
Who, by the way, is hitting cleanup.
Right, but Kike Hernandez is the one who bunted. I mean, so that's just a weird lineup construction. Anyway, I know Kike's got reverse splits and all this, but why was he bunting? And then again, execution. That's just brutal. But, if you're going to bunt, at least get him over. He bunted it right back to Peacock. Terrible decision and terrible bunt.
But the thing about that was, it's like... You're playing for a one. You're again the bunt. There are situations. I am not always anti-bunt. The bunt is a situation.
This is clearly
you need one run. If you need one run, you can trade out where one run you will raise your chances of getting one run and give up chances of getting more. The thing I never will understand in that is Dave Roberts had seen the game to that point had to be thinking, you know, I don't think that this game's going to end up 8-7.
I mean, and it's the Dodgers. How often do the Dodgers bunt? Period.
So again,
it's not. I mean, I'll use the football term. They're off schedule. that's like a team that never runs the ball. That's just like a run and shoot team. All of a sudden, lining up in a jumbo package. I mean, you just don't do that.
But beyond that, and Justin Turner was standing on second, and Cody Bellinger was on deck. If Cody Bellinger hits the ball, I know that Justin Turner is not moving.
He did.
But he's not moving well.
Yeah.
But if he makes contact, you've got a pretty good chance that if the ball's not an out, that Turner's going to score on anything anyway.
You know how many sacrifice bunts the Dodgers had all season?
How many?
First of all, as a team, they had 31. How many by non-pitchers?
Six.
Four. So that play is inexplicable both in the context of that game and in the wider context of their season, and that is the kind of thing that makes it so dumb. It's not what they do.
But,
and then in that game, to do it, it makes no sense. It'd be like Kershaw saying, I can't grip my slider, I'm going to throw a knuckleball. Actually, maybe that would have worked.
I do think, though, that one of the things that happens in these games right now is that, and maybe I'm making too many excuses for the managers and all, but the game has changed so fast that you get in one of these games, and weird decisions get made because people partly just cannot keep up with, like, pull back from it and you go, if Dave Roberts sat down with his front office today and they said, let's analyze this, let's go through the process.
Here's the only reason I can think of. Okay, let's get a run and get to Stripling and Jansen. And that's going to work. It's still not the percentage play. But that's the only thing I can think of is, I wanted to get a lead and get the ball to Jansen as fast as possible. That's the only thing that makes any sense.
And the logic, I guess, also is yes, Hernandez is your cleanup hitter, but he's been a utility guy, so this shouldn't seem to be outside of his...
Even if
he hasn't been asked to do it. How many? I'm guessing the answer for him is going to be zero.
Nobody had more than one.
He had one.
He's one of the ones who had one. Chase Utley, Red Turner, and Yasmani Grandal, other guys.
Wait. Red Turner.
Hey, he went to Fullerton. You know he's going to execute.
Yeah, I know he's going to execute it.
Give him a freaking drop five from the mid-90s. He dropped the bunt down.
We were playing with the drop five.
It was a totally inexplicable play. The Dodgers still took the lead that inning. And, of course, gave it back up in the bottom of the ninth. I mean, the bottom of the inning on those six pitches by Brandon Morrow, who I just feel terrible for because he's been so outrageous.
Well,
in the postseason.
But especially, like, again,
in the regular season.
And I follow because what happens is that you get into these situations and the reliever who's been good for you becomes your security blanket beyond anything in those situations. But at the same time, you want to talk about Brandon McCarthy. They didn't have much choice, but like when Brandon McCarthy came in, I think it was that game two. You know, that was like, and you're saying this guy is being put in a situation where failure is almost his only option. Like asking a guy who's pretty much not pitched for a month, oh, okay, by the way, take on the best lineup in baseball. Good luck. Brandon Morrow, who, yes, he has relieved, and he's had a great year relieving, but this is not a guy who in anywhere in his career has been described as a guy who's like, oh, he's got the arm. If you need him to go today, tomorrow, the next day, absolutely, he can do it. He's the opposite of that.
Exactly.
He is the opposite of that guy.
Well, that was the first time they said in his whole life he'd been asked to pitch three times in a row. So I'm sure that is
probably
back to like his amateur days.
You know, and so what I'm saying is you are putting him in a scenario there where he has nothing to compare that to. He goes out there in a situation where
he has no frame of reference for success.
He has no way of knowing, okay, I know how to do this. I've done this before. You know, and the funny thing is about, again, is we're not even getting to the fact that Kenley Jansen, who is considered among, if we're saying the best relievers in baseball.
If you want to say he's the best reliever in the major leagues in a post-Rivera world, you have a very strong argument.
Right, you can make that argument. You can absolutely make that argument. Royals fans will say, no, Wade Davis has never had a series like this in the postseason. But but the thing about it is that Kenley Jansen gave it up again.
Yeah, he did.
And when you talk about, for all the things that we've talked about also, though, with the managerial decisions and everything, it does come back to, if you're Dave Roberts, you had Clayton Kershaw on the mound with a 4-run lead, and then you had Kenley Jansen on the mound, and you said, we've got Kenley Jansen, they've got Joe Musgrove, and after that, they literally have no one else in that bullpen. They have Ken Giles and Francisco Liriano.
They're two guys that they do not want to use.
In any scenario.
Yeah.
And so you're saying, okay, we are really, for all this, we're set up here. And the reality of it is that Kenley Jansen is the one who, and
ultimately, that's why the Dodgers are losing this series. Ultimately, that's why they're down 3-2, is that two of their studs.
Two of the best players in the game.
Right. The two guys that you would look at and say, the formula for the Dodgers winning the World Series, those two guys are integrally involved. And they still could be, and the Dodgers could still win the World Series.
They need to win two games.
They have to be better. You have to imagine that we're going to see both of them in games.
If the Dodgers are to win this series.
Yes. You would imagine you're going to see
them. Now, the thing about that is, though, is you do run into right now, after everyone gets one day to go to bed early, please everyone, get some good sleep, because you know we'll be back at this Tuesday. But you do know that they now are in a situation where they have the exact flip side of what they were, like, you know, as good as Keuchel is, you go Kershaw, Keuchel, Dodgers got to win that game. Now we got the flip side of that, which is Rich Hill's really good.
Yeah.
But Rich Hill's not Justin Verlander.
No, he's not. And can Justin Verlander keep on being, like, the last pitcher standing who can throw 7 innings and make it look normal in a postseason game? Well, I guess what I wonder, JJ, is, with the balls the way they are, which I think we all think that there's a problem with the baseballs. Eric Surkamp, the former NC State pitcher who I think got to the big leagues with the Giants. I'm not sure if Eric is still active. I should have looked that up. But he tweeted, is it the balls that are juice or just the bats? I haven't seen anyone get sawed off in a while. And Jim Cott thinks the same thing. We talked about the AAA championship game, how he thinks the bats are, you know, the way they're lacquered, the way they're treated and prepped right now. He thinks they're just way too live, the wood bats. And Eric Surkamp said, I'm not sure what year it was, but the Tyler Colvin play where he got impaled by the bat comes to mind. A few years after that, they started to put the marks on the bat so you knew where the grain was strongest, and you just don't see them flying anymore. So this is a player, a pitcher, and then there's a lot of people who've been around the game a long time. I think the bats sound different. They serve on, if you watch an ESPN game this year, any ESPN Major League game, the sound they caught behind home plate, the ball at the bat, was just so different this year. I mean, I haven't asked anybody who knows, except for we talked about it with Jim Cotton, Stubby Clapp in Scranton. And Stubby definitely thinks there's something with the balls. Everybody thinks there's something with the balls. Tim Dillard thinks there's something with the balls.
I was going
to
say,
I think there's something with the bats, too. I do. I think there's something to that.
But to me, like, if you're, and again, I don't even know if Major League Baseball wants to change this, but if you want to, the first thing you do, tweeted about this yesterday. It's like the specs for the baseball right now.
I think right now you bring in a truckload of IL and PCL baseballs.
But I'm saying, but the specs, the specifications for what is a legal Major League Baseball are kind of an artifact. It's kind of like the tolerances that you needed to build a Model T. You know, they're so wide. Like, it is something where the simple thing you could do for 2018, if Major League Baseball wants to change this, and I don't know if they do, because
they do.
I think that they look at that like more people are talking about, you know, the World Series and this series with 1,000. Literally, we've already set the home run record, and we have 2 games to go. And all at right. The rate these are going, we could not just set it. It could be like, oh, this is double the most home runs that it, you know, it is. But if they do, the thing you can do is you can tighten the tolerances for what is acceptable for a baseball. Because right now, when Major League Baseball says these balls haven't changed, the translation of that can be all these balls are within the specifications of a Major League Baseball, which can be very true,
right,
and still mean that the ball carries an extra 20 feet, as we've had studies show this year.
Right.
You know,
a lot of studies. I linked to out of Kyle's story the other day at baseballamerica.com. I mean, we see what role the equipment plays in amateur baseball. You just see it at the college level. When they change the bats, 50% of the home runs went out. And when they changed the baseballs, just lowering the seams, a lot of the power came back. Not all of it, but they brought a lot of the power back.
But again,
the equipment clearly is playing a role.
And again, like we had Lance McCullers, who said basically the same thing about the World Series balls to Tom Verducci that Tim Diller said about the difference between the Major League ball
yeah.
and the minor league ball, which is that...
That podcast is long, isn't it?
No, I've got it. I'm going to...
Okay, we had a great interview with Tim Diller.
It's coming. But they both said, you could do a blindfold test. You could basically put random balls in a bag, and I can pick out which ones are which. And if that's the case, like, and as I think McCullers' quote said was, it's like if you use a number 2 pencil for all your life, and that's what you do, and then they give you a pen, you know the difference.
Right, exactly. Andy McCullough of the LA Times had the really good line this morning that is worth repeating. JJ, I'll pose the question to you. He says, the sport of baseball is broken in 2017, or it's rejuvenated, or it's somewhere on the spectrum in between. If broken is 20 and rejuvenated is 80, is on the spectrum in between, where would you put it?
See, the funny thing is I think, I'm going to give a real cop-out answer, but I've been really thinking this even before you asked that question, which is this is kind of, I did it very poorly asking you earlier. I think that this is completely alien to everything I know about baseball. It is. Like, Yasiel Puig hit a home run. Now, Yasiel Puig's very strong, but he hit a home run where one of his hands had already left the bat. Like,
Todd Frazier style.
And last night. And so it is broken from the standpoint. It's absolutely broken from the standpoint of what baseball, if you want to make the argument that is broken because what happens now is that baseball is a game that at its core, yes, if you make a mistake, it gets punished. If you execute properly, it's rewarded. And right now, we are in a world where you can make a mistake and punished is no longer a double. It's always a homer.
Or you can make a mistake with your fastball and miss your spot by a foot. But if you throw 98 or 100,
right.
Get away with it.
But the other part of it is I don't know, though, for the postseason. Again, if you talk about over the course of 162 games, we can't have 162 games like this for anyone. The bullpens will literally implode. But if you talk about for a postseason, I can't tell you that this is not, for the average fan, a more entertaining form of the game. Because that game last night, that's, for an average fan, that is more entertaining than Morris versus Smoltz, you know, basically two pitchers trading, which was as compelling as it gets. But this has...
That game was seen by a lot more people.
But that's the nature of, you know, yes, 1991 versus now, but yes.
That's not the only thing, though. I mean, like, that was Game 7, and I think that product was compelling. I mean, 1-0's extreme, 13-12 is extreme. I feel like the fact that we have no hope of 1-0, that's what's extreme. Because in 1993, in the same conditions... Mm-hmm. Two years later, you had 15-14. I think the thing that's alien is that it feels like we have no hope of 1-0. That's... It feels like we have no hope of seeing a game where there's not something, like you said, alien. That's what feels weird. That's the weird part. Is the game always has these has always had this tacking back and forth. But when it's at an extreme, you feel, you sense it, like 1987 when we were teenagers. That felt weird. Jesus, Larry Sheets hit 30 home runs? That's weird. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then when Brady Anderson hit 50 home runs, it was like, something's up. So this year, when it was this extreme, something's up. And I go back to the Bill James phrase, baseball is not some perfect machine. So I do think that the powers that be in the sport need to figure out some way to tack back. Because I think right now it's more toward the four. I would put a 40 on that 2080 spectrum. It's more toward broken. It might even be 35 if I can go half grades. But it's not irredeemable. That doesn't mean that there aren't really flashes where it's really entertaining.
But here are two things that sums it up for me, is where I struggle to compute this game. The Astros pitching staff in the World Series has given up a 1.15 whip, walks plus hits divided by innings pitch. Mm-hmm. 1.15
That's good.
Is really good. They have a 5.55 ERA, which is really bad. Those two numbers, the Dodgers,
A small sample of 13-12 game is going to throw things off. And the Dodgers have scored 6-6-3-1 prior to that. You'd take that in your first four games.
But my point being, though, is the Dodgers also 1.3 whip, which is still within the range of, okay, that's not that great.
Yeah,
but it's not.
That's lesser, for sure.
5.2 ERA.
Right.
My point being, what it comes down to is that the thing that is crazy about the game right now is the home runs. Everything else about it, I mean, there's velocity and all that, but the reality is if you took that game last night,
see, I would say that I oversimplified about Kershaw earlier. I think that's a little bit too much of an oversimplification because the things that are crazy is the home runs. That goes back to the offensive approach, and that is seen in every at bat. You see in every single at bat just these swings that are not what you're supposed to teach people to do when they hit. And you see offensive approaches and approach to playing the game. I mean, I don't want to go back to 1900 to 1919, but four sacrifice bunts by the entire team the whole year that are not by pitchers, that's alien. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but that is certainly alien, JJ. Four sacrifice bunts the whole year?
Oh, yeah. But no, but that is also, that is when you say, like, okay, also the fact, like, we are now, we see it with the managers who keep being fired. We are not in a manager world.
Right.
We are in a GM world. And when that comes down to the difference between a GM and a manager, a GM-run team or a front office-run team and a manager-run team, is that a front office-run team says, the numbers say, like, the reason why you do not see pitchers face, no one goes to the lineup three times, is that the numbers say it generally does not work for you. The reason why you see no sacrifice bunts now is not that it never works, but the numbers say over the course of a season it does not work for you. All those things. And we're seeing...
I wouldn't say that it says over the course of a season it doesn't work. It says it's a less efficient way of scoring.
You will score less runs if you do that than if you
don't.
And teams want to score runs.
Over the course of a year, but not in... There are certain situations where is more efficient.
Right. No, it's not more... You will score. You will give. You
it's have a better way to win a game.
Right. It's a better way to win a game. You'll score less runs, but again, there are times where one run.
Last night was certainly not that kind of game.
Yes.
That's the crazy.
But what I'm saying is that. But the thing that the other thing with the literally every swing the monster hacks every swing could be a home run. The other thing that it does because of that is that when you do have a game like this where both bullpens are gassed and there aren't a whole lot of guys you feel are reliable. The problem with that also becomes is that we nowadays, if you're a man, again, this is the worst. If you're a manager, I don't even know how
I'm
you.
I'm going more macro level. Like, well, the thing is, when you have when the bunt is totally not part of the game, that changes who you play at third base. That should change how you practice. What are all your PFPs for? Half of that is covering first. Other half are bump plays. You know, why shouldn't every pitcher be CeCe Sabathia sized? you don't have to field bunts. Fielding your position is insignificant. How many ground balls are there? That's what I'm saying, JJ. It's like, that's the bigger picture part of this. Oh. So when the home runs are, I'm saying that it's all the subtleties of how different the game is. That's the alien part to me, because that could totally change everything about how players profile at different positions. When we see second base as this incredibly offensive position, it's very rare. I mean, look at Altuve on that play where Ethier slid into him. He just didn't expect a guy to be sliding hard, you know? I mean, so he didn't. Altuve is one of the most athletic and agile second basemen. If that had been Jeff Kent, just for to pull a name out, if that had been Daniel Murphy for the Nationals, he just got trucked. Mm-hmm. I mean, his knees might not be attached anymore on that play, and that wasn't even that hard. So, I mean, the game is, there are a lot of, because of the big picture offensive approach, there's so many little things about the game that are different. The obvious thing to me is the home runs, and they feel alien. But because of that, it's all the other small things. Those are the things that are really, like, totally just not baseball. So much little nuance and little things are just not part of the game anymore. So in that aspect, it's like Gorilla Ball in the mid-90s, with the exception of they're incredible athletes playing it, as opposed to guys hitting home runs who had no business hitting home runs. That's the really... Well, so that's what's crazy about it. The style of play, any of those subtleties are all...
But to take it macro, what we've also seen, like, the hit the ball hard, like, the world that we lived in until recently, where the hit the ball hard, you know, on a line, and it'll pay off, which still to some extent, but the reality of it is the other part with that is that now we have seen shifts. We now know, like, when shifts started, it was like, oh, no, guys should be able to just go the other way. And it is crazy, but the reality is there are very few players who...
Well, when he did it last night.
But there are...
It goes back to offensive approach,
But hold on. There are very few players, even if they're trying. It is weird about how if you hit the ball in the air, you hit the ball to all fields. And then if you hit them on the ground, most players, even if they're trying, are going to pull it on almost every, you know, almost a large proportion of the time. And there are very few hitters who have a swing that they can do something else. And if you do right now, then what you were rewarded with is that you actually get to see two infielders on one side of the bag and two on the other.
I mean, like, the guy who did that the best in our lifetime was Tony Gwynn. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Ichiro, I guess it would give you the other argument. But Tony Gwynn did that better than anybody. And he's kind of, looked down on almost by some people. And all the Tim Raines discussions, so much of it was Raines greater than Gwynn, which really frustrated me because I just don't feel like that was the case. And one of the reasons, Gwynn just had all these singles. I mean, that's denigrated by an analytics mode. It is looked down on, which I don't understand. Singles greater than walks. Hits are greater than walks. They have a greater run expectancy than walks. So I feel like that's one of these things because that's a guy who stayed inside the ball and could use the whole field, and so you couldn't shift on him. It feels like there's a lot of modern writers, analysts,
who
thought that was not good enough.
But I'll tell you, in this game right now, it's not, because the reality is that single. We are living in a world right now where, If you're getting a hit 35% of the time, but I'm hitting a home run, you know, one out of every two games, three games, then I'm getting more bases than you. That's the crazy world that we live in now.
I think over 162 games, I get it. But that's what I'm saying. That's why the World Series seems so alien, because nobody can do the other part. That's why we've been asking the question of whether it's good or not.
But what I'm saying is when you say no one can do, and I'm saying you'd be crazy to do it right now, because in a game where there are how many home runs were that game?
You need base runners too, JJ. You need both. You need base runners too.
How many home runs were in that game though?
There were a lot. That's not the only game, JJ. How about the night before? The Astros didn't hit any home runs with anybody on base, so they didn't win the game. We're not just focused. We're not talking about just the one game.
But there have been right now we are
game. Yes, I know how many home runs there are. We're also debating whether that's good or not.
No, but what I'm saying is I'm not. You're saying the aesthetic's worth good or not, and I'm saying you'd be crazy nowadays if you're a player to not do it that way. Don't do the little things because you're going to win more by doing the big things.
I don't.
That's what I'm saying.
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
I know that's what you're saying. I think you're wrong. So I mean, like, we just had a couple of World Series teams 2 years ago. Is the environment so completely different?
There's double the home runs now.
No, they're not double
home. Double the home run rate, is there not?
That's 50% for 2014. Yeah. But 15 was up, 16's up, 17's up. So I don't think we're at that extreme point. But I mean, you've been at the extremes the whole postseason of bullpenning and pitcher usage and all that stuff. So, and I just don't think that I don't agree with those extremes. So maybe I'm just not opening my eyes to it. Last night was certainly the extreme. But I don't think the sport should give in to the extremes either. I feel like if the commissioner's office and you're seeing these baseball, you're seeing the way the sport's being played, I think you do something about it because I don't feel like this is the best that the sport can be. It's certainly thrilling theater. I don't feel like this is the sport. Like you said, it looked alien.
Oh, no. That's where I'm with you on that.
That's why I don't understand why we're arguing about it.
But what I'm saying is I agree with you in that the way the game is created right now.
There's more than one way to win the game. That's all I'm saying. You're saying no, there's only one way to win the game.
I'm saying the way to win the game most in 2017 is this way.
But I don't disagree. I see the thing. I see what's happening. But there are certain times it feels like, not bunting. But not in that situation. But there are times you can still be rewarded with a better offensive approach. I just don't think that's crazy to say. And you're saying it is crazy. Sometimes the better offensive approach is to not every hitter should try to be Jim Thome. I don't want to watch a game where every hitter tries to be Jim Thome. Sometimes I want to watch Jim Thome. Sometimes I want to watch Tony Gwynn. You're saying no, everyone should be Jim Thome.
You want to watch. I'm saying win games.
No, I'm saying to win games, you have to have base runners too. Hey, sometimes you need Tim Raines, or sometimes you need just someone who gets on base.
But that's
everybody
what...
and can run and can score a ball of the gap. Jose Altuve is that player in this game. He's the best player in baseball. He was our player of the year. He's not the player you're talking about. He can do it all. So I don't understand why we're saying that extreme is the only way. He is the ultimate example of a player who can do everything. Base running, hit to all fields, and he has power. I mean, he doesn't sell out for every single at bat. So, I think Altuve, is a great example of an entertaining baseball player. It's because he's not always trying to hit the ball 500 feet. Neither is Bregman. I mean, like, those are the best players we're watching. So, at some point, those guys, I'm really just arguing for a good offensive approach. And I don't think that's crazy. You're basically saying it's crazy for you to have a good offensive approach. I'm saying no. It's smart to have a good offensive approach.
And what I'm saying is that, again, we can disagree on it, but I want it to be other. I want it to be. But I do think that right now...
You're arguing that it's more productive to have a bad offensive approach.
I'm arguing that right now it is more productive to try to hit a home run with every swing. And that is what teams... And that's what I believe the analytics...
I just think that you're wrong. That's exactly what Altuve doesn't do. He doesn't do that, and he's the best player in baseball.
In this postseason, in this World Series, Altuve has 6 hits. 4 of them are extra bases. He has 2 singles in this postseason.
I'm not saying hit singles, JJ. I'm saying a good offensive approach, where sometimes the best thing you can do is a single. A single is better than a swing and a miss, right? I mean, how hard is that?
Single is better than a swing and a miss. I would say with the way the ball is flying right now, a single is not necessarily better than a swing and a miss on 1-0. If you also get that swing on 1-1.
That's a good offensive approach. A good offensive approach is getting a pitch that you can drive. A good offensive approach. And a lot of these guys don't have good offensive approaches. And it's the all or nothing offensive approach. I get it worked last night. Big reason why it worked last night is Clayton Kershaw and Brandon Morrow. But I think a good offensive approach is the other thing the Astros do have. They have several players with outstanding offensive approaches, including even in the last inning, Brian McCann.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was 2 outs, nobody on when that started, right?
Yeah, if I remember right.
2 outs, nobody on for Jansen, hit by pitch and walk. Jansen had 7 walks all year.
He looks utterly like he just.
It looks like he caught the first 9 innings of that game before he came in.
I was really trying to envision a scenario, and I couldn't come up with one where Kenley Jansen ended up catching in that game last night. You know, like if it got. because well, it was
Chris Hatcher not on their postseason run, so that's too bad. I love that they, during the year, I don't think Hatcher is, but they had two converted catcher guys, two guys who caught at high levels. Like Hatcher made the major leagues as a catcher and then as a pitcher. And Jansen, I guess he didn't make the major leagues as a catcher.
But he caught extensively up to AAA level.
Right.
And then
I love the Dodgers. For a while there, there was two of their best players.
I also love that Juan Centeno's on this Astros roster. And I like.
Yeah, I mean, like John Smoltz was like, that would be an awful lot to put on the young catcher. And the subtext of that was, I really hope he doesn't come in because I don't know anything about that guy. I ain't, to quote Alan Matthews, I ain't got nothing on him.
Juan Centeno, who's the first guy to throw out Billy Hamilton in a big league game.
That's right.
You know, but like.
There's so much. We didn't even talk about games 3 or 4, but game 5.
Had, I mean, game 5
game
was.
Game 5 to me was like Revenge of the Sith. There was way too much going on. They tried way too much to pack way too much into one game. It should have been 3 games. And oh, by the way, it wasn't as good as it could have been, but it was still incredible.
The one thing to kick it ahead to wrap this up. Looking at the bullpens for Game 6, again, if you're the Astros, if I've ever seen a game where you may say, no, Justin, no, you stay out there. Who, I mean, Davinsky, okay, Will Harris.
Davinsky wasn't good last night.
No, but I think he still has some belief in Will. Like, Ken Giles is going to need a court order to get back into this game.
Well,
you know?
The thing is, to me, that it seems like they're going to go Verlander, McCullers. And you just do Johnny Holstaff if you get to Game 7. But why on earth would you want to get to Game 7? I mean, if you have a lead and Verlander gives you 6 or 7 innings, you would go to McCullers and see if you can get the last 2 or 3. Yeah,
two.
Exactly.
Two.
And then a good offensive approach will have to be what the Dodgers have to adjust to that. I mean, good offensive approach, I'll just say it again. Chris Taylor. How about Chris Taylor to tie that game? He takes 96 down the middle from Davinsky because he's looking changeup. He's sitting changeup and then gets not a bad pitch, but when you're sitting changeup and you get it and you're looking down and away changeup and line that single up the middle.
Which, by the way, but when you
so
say
I guess
about,
he should have been looking to just try to hit that ball 450 feet and you make it sound like it's that easy.
But when you say that, like the thing about it is that's also the sign, though, you say that Davinsky's not at his absolute best because Davinsky at his best. You can look change up, but there's enough drop on it that it still can be, you know, really hard, even if you are
right.
Sitting.
It was a pretty good pitch, though.
Yeah, it was not a bad pitch.
It wasn't a great pitch. No. But it was a decent pitch, and Chris Taylor's a decent player and did something with it. So, I mean, yeah. So, we're just going to be at an impasse about those extremes all the time. So, maybe
I get, but where we do agree about it, though, is that neither of us want it to. I want it to not be that way. I do not want
See,
it to be.
I don't
be.
Get that sense.
No, I
I'm
don't.
I'm glad that you said that.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying.
Because you called it alien, and then you were kind of just.
But I'm saying it's the best way. The way the environment is now, I think it's the way to win. Ways to win games and what the game should be are often very different.
But, JJ, people were arguing that in 2014 and 15 that the Royals were doing it wrong, and they won. And they were arguing that in that environment, they were saying that the way the Royals played was wrong. And the Royals won anyway. So I don't agree with you that even in the environment of 3 years ago, of 2014, with 4,100 cumulative home runs, people were saying that the Royals were doing it wrong offensively. And they almost won the World Series in 2014, and they won it in 2015. So you can do it that way. I think there's a million ways to win a baseball game. And that is, I think, disappointing as a baseball fan to hear people say, no, there's only one way to win. And that's what's glorious about baseball. And basketball fans make the same comments that right now that, oh, it's disappointing that there's only one way to win a basketball game, that if you don't shoot threes, you don't win.
Well,
does it mean that 3-point shot isn't entertaining, but you have the same conversation going on in basketball?
Oh, you absolutely do, because it's the same thing is going on, which is that you're right. There are more than one ways to win a game. But if you are front office led, if the front office...
And everybody is now.
And everyone
no
is.
One who isn't.
And everyone is. And if you're front office led, then what you are trying to do is find the optimal, which means that everyone gets funneled into the same answer, much more so.
And that goes to my point earlier. That's going to... We're going to start seeing the way the kinds of players on the field change. You're going to start seeing, I think, just the way... No one will be able to do the little things anymore. I mean,
and the flip side of that is that if you're Kansas City, and if you won't happen, but if you just rip up the grass and put in a good mid-80s carpet and build your game
like that,
but and build your game like that, you would have such an advantage
in your home games, because you're right. The way we have funneled in some way because of the, also the ballparks, it, and they have an old ballpark that has a massive expanse. Right. If you said, if you took the typical AL team and you put them in 1985 Kauffman or Busch Stadium and said, go play, they wouldn't be able to do it. They're not constructed to do that. It's like, wait, I hit that ball hard. It didn't leave? No. Our left fielder can't cover a massive expanse. And by the way, when the ball hits the carpet, it takes off.
Yeah, exactly.
They're getting doubles and triples all the time.
I mean, I love Corey Seager and Carlos Correa. They're fantastic players. I don't know they'd be shortstops on turf.
Right.
I don't think they would.
So what would be again, it's not going to happen, but what would be fascinating is if you, a team truly did, because field turf's not the same thing. But if a team truly did zig where everyone zags, I don't even think you would. You're right. The MLBPA would never allow you to put down, hey, we've got concrete, we've got a little bit of padding, and then we've got a, basically a flat rug. But that someone doing that in that environment, it would be something like basically Babe Ruth right now, like showing up in 1920. You know, like, yeah, I hit homers.
I guess that's the other thing is that everything feels broken right now, JJ. Everything. Everything feels broken. I don't like it when baseball feels broken too. That's supposed to be the escape, and it's not an escape when it's broken too. So everything feels broken, and I don't like baseball feeling broken. So I don't, and I don't, I really don't, I just don't like it when, that's why I push back. It's just I don't like it. That's why I push back strongly on the notion that there's only one way to win a baseball game. And I think that's, you know, even when there was Gorilla Ball in the mid-90s in college baseball, Fords won a national championship in 1995, they didn't play Gorilla Ball. They hit for home runs when they had to, but they could win other ways too. And so teams that can only win one way, players who can only play one way, that's not baseball for me, and that's why I get distressed about it. And I do think people appreciate what we saw last night and how dramatic it was, but also appreciate that there's something really off, and I would love to see the commissioner address it. I think the number one way he can address it is the baseballs, but I'd love to see the other team, the teams address it as well, kind of collectively. What, you know, what do they think? What do they think of this sport? Where are they taking it? Because I don't know that we could take 162 games played.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know you could think if that was a normal game, if that became normal. Then I don't think over a course of a regular season, I would not want to be a fan going to that. I can't do 5 hours as a regular course of, you know.
No,
you can't. I'm sorry, and I know that there are fans out there who say, "Oh no, I want the game to last as long as it."
I don't have easy answers.
I don't have easy answers, but I'll tell you this. I understand if you're retired and you really do not have to get up in the morning. I understand that that's a logical answer. If you've got kids that you got to get to the bus no matter what, I can take a game like that. But at the same time, man, I did appreciate 2 hours and 28, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was game one.
It was like, I'm going to bed at a normal hour. This is awesome. So there's a lot. There was a lot. I mean, again, we knew there would be a lot. We've been doing 30 minutes on these. We went an hour because there was a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, we had three games. And you know, only when I'm talking about one. Like I said, I will stick by my Revenge of the Sith comp.
So
flawed but entertaining.
We do thank you for tuning in today. Today's podcast was sponsored by Baseballism. Don't forget to shop now at baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP, B-A-S-H-I-P, to receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com to shop for hats, shirts, and more today. For John, I'm JJ, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.